Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
On New Year's Eve, Frank and I were assigned to standby duty. A few minutes before 8 p.m., we got a call from the main jail that Wesley Fisher wanted to see us. We went to the second floor of the main jail, the interview room.
All right, what's on your mind, Fisher?
A lot. I'm getting a dirty deal. I'm going to do something about it.
Well, what's the trouble?
I was supposed to be bailed out. She promised me. I was supposed to have a lawyer. I had the public defender.
Who's she?
I'm not going to take all the heat. They're in just as deep as I am. They can't do right by me. I'll square it up myself. I'll tell you everything I know.
Go ahead. What is it?
Her name's Betty McGraw. She's the one you've been looking for. She planned it out. The whole idea was hers. She got everybody together. It was her show.
Where will we find her?
213 Foster, Apartment 8.
Wesley Fisher gave us a complete statement of all of his crimes and also implicated the other members. He told us Betty McGraw was his girlfriend. She'd come up with the idea for the obituary racket. She gathered the men together for the job, and it had been planned that she was to stay in the background. In case of trouble, she would furnish aid to the gang members in the form of bail bond money and lawyers. She received a percentage of the take from each of the gang members. We checked her through R&I and found that she had a record. We checked out the address on the package and found that she'd gone to a New Year's Eve celebration at a downtown hotel. It was 11:57 when we got to the hotel. We identified ourselves to the special officer and showed him the mugshot of Betty McGraw. He thought he'd seen her at the bar. We started looking.
Betty McGraw.
What do you want with her?
All right, now, come on, lady, sober up. Is your name Betty McGraw?
Yeah, I'm Betty McGraw, but I don't know you. Who are you anyway?
Police officers, we'd like to talk to you outside.
Outside? I'm staying in here. This is where the party is, right here.
All right, come on, lady, outside.
Is there a bar outside? I didn't know there was a bar outside.
Come on, lady, let's go.
I don't know you at all. I'm not going. I'm not going with you. This is New Year's Eve. Don't you know that? New Year's Eve, and it's almost 12 o'clock.
Trying to get through all this.
Yeah, we'll have to wait.
Hey.
Yeah? What's the matter?
I don't know why, but I always cry on New Year's Eve. No reason. I just cry.
Yeah?
Every year, New Year's Eve, midnight comes, I cry. I have no reason for it.
Is that right?
I cry. I just cry. Never did have any reason for it.
You're gonna have one this year, lady.
Very Merry Christmas and having a happy holiday season. This is your hero, Mark Biro, once again on a Tuesday afternoon with you, our friends, our bosom buddies, our evildoers, everybody. We invite everybody in. And this is WMNF 88.5, and it's the Midpoint Talk program. And as I said, with your hero, Mark Biro. Yes, I played that Dragnet Open, New Year's Eve Dragnet, because I wonder, are we, as Jack Webb said, going to have a reason to cry this year, the upcoming season? I'll tell you, we've had one hell of a year. I don't know about you. And again, my theme is, I don't know, maybe it's me. But when you examine this year, the promise and the hope and the dreams and the anger wanting to be answered with something nostalgic from the past. I don't know, again, about you, but what I see being replaced with that milk syrupy nostalgia that we would like to have is a lot of anger and resentment and even more diversity. And worse than that, we have people in power that are utilizing that fervor. They're actually stirring the pot rather than bringing us together. And there are many of us that are happy to settle with that result. It seems to me that what I get, particularly, well, not just here, not on the air, but in my everyday life, I run into so many individuals, people that I consider to be friends, and there's still an anger and a resentment and a lot of it, sadly, is a quiet resentment. There is they've replaced silent night, holy night, with silence, and underneath that anger. I'm not very good at putting things together, really. I try to draw out without being argumentative. You know, what is it that you're searching for? What is it that you would like? If you want to get specific, what kind of legislation do you require to get things done? I mean, now what we're seeing as we come to the end of this year and we're approaching the new year, I see stories about families being separated because we got to get these Mexicans out of here, you know. They're a danger to this country. They're taking our jobs away. I've never seen so many Mexicans take our jobs like I have since the election campaign. There are so many Mexicans threatening us. I see Mexicans, for instance, invading the halls of Wall Street. They all want to be Wall Street lawyers and brokers. I mean, they're taking away good jobs. I also see them taking the jobs at the CEO positions. These Mexicans, we got to watch them. We got to watch them. I know there are other foreigners coming into our country that we don't like, but let's face it, Mexicans are an easy target. Not only that, learn English, Mexicanos. And all of you in West Tampa and Ybor City that were born and raised and spoke Italian or Spanish or something, you need to grow up too. They don't want you here either, by the way. You're lucky they ain't got nothing on you right now. Because you and I, we'd be gone. I might get away with it because I pass. And my brothers, my black brothers and sisters out there, my friends that know me, they know what I'm talking about. I pass. I have friends of mine that they look at me and they ask me, what the hell happened to you anyway? What in the hell? And I consider it a badge of honor that they tell me that. I'm not looking to persecute, crucify. What is it about us that as I've said before, we honor all of these seasonal good cheer type stories. We love A Christmas Carol. We particularly love It's a Wonderful Life. What do you like about that movie? And how did you apply it to our last election? I mean, are you kidding me? What did you miss about Jimmy Stewart standing in the bank, trying to keep the community together, caring about one another and the fate of each other? Wasn't that what the movie was about? What a commie that guy is. And we love it. We all know that Bert and Ernie, the cab driver, and the other, by the way, those are the character names of Sesame Street in honor of those individuals. Look at the way people were, I'll use the word, conditioned to think. God, I wish we were conditioned that way now, if that's the word, conditioned. We were, can you imagine what a terrible crime? This is a Franklin Roosevelt film, if I ever saw one. The ideals of the New Deal, stay together, care about each other, provide programs and give you an opportunity. And as Jimmy Stewart told Potter, whom we all seem to admire today, we love the Mr. Potters. We love the Ebenezer Scrooges. Hell, we love the J.R. Ewings. These are the people we admire. We used to laugh at Mr. Drysdale, the banker on the Beverly Hillbillies, the obvious greed. We used to laugh at those people. And we used to see Mr. Potter as the enemy, basically. The thing we didn't want to be. But now we've lost sight of all that. Why? Or have we? Is this going to be a good year? What will make it a good year? Are you going to be blind and deaf to the DACA people, for instance? What happened to all these pledges that were made about strengthening Social Security and Medicare? And with this tax bill, we are seeing the fiscal gutting of those programs so that they can turn around later and tell you they didn't work. Well, I could tell you now, most of the guys that I know, like me, were on Social Security now. Would you have saved that money growing up, indulging the way you did, the way I did? I was always proud that that money was being set aside for me. Never knowing in my lifetime that I would face blindness, that I would be without insurance to pay for it. Why? Because the insurance that I had, when it expired, the rules toughened on existing conditions. Oh, sure. I could have gotten insurance, but it would have cost me more than it did to live. Monthly, have a roof over my head. I know what that is. I know I've been called an elitist, at least by one, who knows nothing about the trials and tribulations that I and many other people have. Yes, I do know. I know what it is not to have money to pay for an electric bill. I know what it is to have your water turned off. I'm not that much different than you. And yet, I worked all my life. But there are people around, particularly in power, that seem to think that it's your fault. They want to point to these extreme cases of either laziness or unwillingness to participate in our daily lives and point to those poor, unfortunate, misguided individuals as the example and the rule, and they're not. I am the example of the rule. You are the example in your daily struggle. And only our caring about one another, only being our brother's keeper, only looking for the very best in all of us, will we overcome this feeling that we have of being neglected. Because if we don't care for one another, who's going to care about you? I'm just without, oddly enough, as much as I've spoken here, I'm without words. And that's unusual for me, especially. I really think, and I've really believed, that there is more good than evil. But only with knowledge, only with a curiosity, and only with an extension of a hand to your fellow human beings, are we going to rise above the pettiness, the anger? Didn't you feel good at Christmas time and during this holiday season when you extended a gift to someone, not just in your family, but to someone you really cared about? I know I do. I do every day. I think we should live Christmas all 365 days of the year. And beyond Christmas, the other religious holiday-related activities all have that feeling of brotherhood, an extension of caring. Or is that only what you do on Sunday? And then your heart turns to stone. I'd like to know, the big question today is, with all we've been through this entire year, do you expect us to have a reason to cry, as I played on the Dragnet episode? Are we going to cry next year? Or are we going to be a productive nation? Is there something you want the Congress and this president to do to make our year indeed a happy new year? I'm one of those that doesn't believe the leopard changes its spots, but maybe you could tell me. This tax plan that was passed, do you think, honestly, do you honestly in your heart think that this was going to help you? Did you see our president when he was in the privacy of Mar-a-Lago with all of his wealthy friends when he told them, this is going to be the best year for you because this tax plan was for you? Did you see that? Did you hear it? The betrayal. See, lie is an overused phrase, but isn't that the opposite of what he'd been telling us? And these Republican legislators that push this thing over are telling you something that I told you, be honest with you. You believe giving business everything that they need because they're the job creators. Do you believe that? Did you buy that ticket? I'd like to hear from you. Here are the numbers. I mean, and the boards are starting to light up. 813-239-9663. That's the number to call if you want to send me an email. It's dj@wmnf.org. I don't know. I feel like laughing through the whole thing. And I really do wish all of us a happy new year. This is my new year show. But we'll see. We'll hear from you. And believe it or not, now that I've finished the monologue, we've got at least four lines open. So I'm going to start right away and glad to with a lady's voice. Hello, Tina in Tampa.
Hey, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
I missed the very first part of your talk, your monologue, but I get what you're saying. Got most of it. And my comment is this. I think that most people in this country are aware that that was a big fat lie that when the tax plan was passed. I think, you know, well, polls show that 55% of the people thought it was a bad idea.
It's more than two-thirds of the people, whether they say they don't know or they're not sure, plus what you've just said, yes.
It's a bad idea. And the thing is that it's split. Okay, it's split right on party line. But those Republicans who voted for, who supposedly represented people in Congress, didn't. I think they only represented a small sliver of a very elite group of people. And I think, you know, I know you tend to be pessimistic about this, but I think that that's going to show up in the 2018 election. I think that, and it's historically this has happened, the opposing party tends to get the majority. The thing is that if that happens, what will the Democrats do? You know, I want that to happen, but they need to just not get the majority back. They need to do something to undo what has happened and to contain any further problems from the president, because that's all he seems to be good for, is causing problems. My estimation. I mean,
Tina, do you have any friends?
Fights with people, and then I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I said, do you have any friends that are Trump supporters?
I tell you the truth, no, I don't.
You're a lucky person.
Unless they just don't want to.
They're very quiet.
Yeah, you know, they may say they're not, but some of them may be, but for different reasons. I think if any of them are, it's because in the very beginning when he was campaigning, they kind of held out hope that, well, maybe he can do something to change the situation economically. Not because of the reasons that some people support him, not out of white supremacy beliefs or anything like that. I think that they were genuinely concerned that they wanted a better economic situation than what exists and what happened after the, you know, the recession.
Yes.
But I feel, I do feel more optimistic, I guess, than you, as far as like this isn't going to stand. I think that the people will speak in the midterms, and the people that they need to elect need to do something about it. So I don't know.
It's all up to us, Tina.
It is. And the main thing is people need to vote. You know, what blows my mind is the number of people that they don't register, they don't vote, they don't think it matters. It matters.
Yes, so, that's very sad. I'm with you all the way on that.
Yeah.
Tina,
great-
I want to wish you a very, very happy new year.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Thank you, Tina. And Tina started it off. Let's roll into it. Here is Randy in West Tampa.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, Randy.
Going back to the beginning of your program about West Tampa and being bilingual and being fortunate, sometimes it's a curse, especially if, like you say, you pass, because then you get to hear what people are really thinking about you.
Yes.
And then on the other side of the coin, just to be fair, sometimes I get to hear what Latinos are thinking about me because they don't know.
Yeah, I know.
It's a two-way street.
I know.
But in reference to what's going on right now, I mean, this is just total madness. And it's basically, we have the government we deserve. People didn't vote. People don't go out to vote. They don't register to vote. I have friends and I have family that are still Trump supporters. They're dwindling. And they're not as vocal as they used to be. But you know, I think, number one, we can thank Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She did a real good job of wrecking this country, okay? And she could take that one to her house with her. But in 2018, we could change the whole thing.
That's the promise of America, really. The fact that we do, in this country, have the opportunity to change directions, and number two, but it involves us being involved in the process. If we don't vote, then we can't change things.
Mm-hmm. I'm retired also, Mark, and every time I hear my Social Security called an entitlement, I keep thinking about all the 6%, well, it's gone up and up and up throughout the years, that I have contributed at 100% of my income.
Of course.
Okay, which right now, people are capped at, I think, 115, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
So if they would double the cap and have them pay, it probably won't take them to 100% of their income.
Well, it's not going to happen with this tax bill. That's one thing.
This tax bill is a joke, okay? It's a big joke, and it can be dealt with in 18.
You'd be surprised how many people I see on Facebook that just echo this support for it in the vaguest of terms, and when I confront them about it and ask them for the specificity, and in fact point to all studies, bipartisan, that say the same thing, this is not good for us. They just shut their eyes and call it fake news.
Yep. Well, I have a good friend and a cousin, which we're like brother and sister, that are very wealthy, and this plan is going to help. In fact, one of them is a real estate developer, so it's really going to help.
Good.
And she says it's a terrible bill.
Well, see, she feels a sense of social responsibility. Randy, I appreciate the call, and I wish you and your family and friends Happy New Year.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, brother. Thank you very much. And let's talk to one of my favorite callers in Dunedin. It's Andy. Hello, Andy.
Happy New Year, Mark. How are you?
It's so good. It's so good to have you call.
I know. Isn't it great to have those shows to think about versus what's on TV nowadays?
Oh, of course. So it's a generational difference.
Oh, yeah, I'm getting old. So listen, here's something that really eats at me. Now, I get my news from the newspaper, old school. But when I go online and see this list of Trump accomplishments, the stock market, the guy would take credit for inventing coleslaw if somebody brought it up.
Right. And they're willing to latch onto those claims without then saying, well, then you must have really admired Obama, because from where the stock market was and where it ended up with record numbers, they were complaining about it.
Yeah, but I want to see somebody, I don't know if PolitiFact has done this, but like, you know, I go online and of course I take everything with a salt block.
Right. Basically.
But now I want to see somebody, you know, go back and say, no, he didn't have anything to do with the stock market. Or no, the housing would have done this on their own. Or jobs would have done this on their own. It has nothing to do with him. But they've got this major list at the end of the year. Look at all the great stuff this guy's done. I'm like, horse hockey.
I know.
Somebody, you or Rob or somebody, really, it'd be nice to hear
We have done. We have done. Both Rob and I have done programs where we have shown, you know, just exactly the kind of measures that were taken by the previous administration and this administration. We're not knocking these numbers, but what we're saying is, yes, it continues to go up, but there was a solid foundation from which it could grow, and that was the very thing that people were against with President Obama. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even close, the kind of gains under the Obama administration and this one. So you start to wonder, you know, personally, I think it's summed up by a very good friend of mine who was a school teacher all her life. And she had to deal with people during several election cycles that were good friends of hers, but that were not going to support, for instance, President Obama's candidacy. And she got tired of talking about the specifics, and she got down right to the crux of it, and I admired her for it. When she was asked, who are you going to vote for and why, she said, well, I'm voting for Obama because he's black. And that really pissed all those friends of hers off. She was just, she got tired of arguing with what she knew what it was all about in their cases. Yeah, and she got right down to it.
People would never admit why they didn't vote for him. They would say, oh, because, oh, come on, we know why you didn't vote for him and why you don't like
because
him.
If you really know these individuals, you'll know it. And as I've said on my show, listen, why don't you just admit it? Because everybody here at the table knows you and knows how you are. And, you know, personally, I love you and trying to reach you to change that part of you so that you can examine what you're doing. But we all know. Come on.
Yeah. The action speak loudest.
All right, Andy.
Mark.
Have a happy new year there, Andy.
You too, Mark.
Okay. Thank you. Hey, what the heck? You know, here is Russell in Tampa. Russell?
Hey, Mark.
How you doing?
Hey, good. Couple quick things about the tax, the new tax law.
Okay.
You need to Google search this man on the street thing that was done last week, where they went around and they said, here's the deal with the new tax law. What do you think? New tax law, blah, blah, blah. And all these people went, oh, it's terrible. It's a con. It's a ripoff. It's a scam. It's this, it's that. Then they went back, talked to another group of people in the same neighborhood, and they said, this is what Bernie Sanders is proposing. And it was the same law. And they went, oh, that's wonderful. That's fantastic.
Well,
that's superb.
Russell, let me ask you. So what you're saying is that the law that President Trump supported and called the legislation that he signed, that it is on par with it exactly what Bernie Sanders proposed as a candidate. Is that correct?
No, I'm saying they took the same law, but they just said they put Bernie Sanders' name on it and everybody was okay with it. It's the same provision.
Okay, so then what you're saying is that whoever is commenting about the law as passed, depending on what side of the political aisle they're on and not the merits of the legislation, they would speak for or against it.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Well, let me just say to those individuals, I can't help them. But for people who have examined the law and who have studied the law, it is almost unanimous. And I mean by a large, large percentage that this bill is not going to be good for the working average American.
It's wrong. You're just flat out wrong.
Thank you very much.
Here's what's beautiful
Mr.
about
Chairman.
The law.
As you know, this is one of the most important pieces of legislation to come before this committee in recent years. And I have to tell you that I am extremely disappointed that you have allocated only 15 minutes for debate. And that means that there are 11 Republicans on your side, 10 Democrats on my side, who will not have the opportunity to give their opinions about this bill before a vote is cast. That is wrong, and it is wrong that the Budget Committee has not yet held a single hearing on this tax bill, not one. But I have to say that I do understand why the Budget Committee, and in fact the Finance Committee, has been so reluctant to hold public hearings to engage the American people in this debate. And that is because this legislation is a disastrous an unfair piece of legislation which gives huge tax breaks to the people who need it the least, the very, very wealthy. It raises taxes on millions of middle-class families at a time when the middle class is struggling. it leaves 13 million more Americans without health insurance while raising premiums 10% a year when we are already paying far higher prices for health care than any other country on earth. It raises the deficit by $1.4 trillion. You know, how many hours have I sat here and have you sat there? And we've seen all the charts and all the discussions about how terrible the deficit is, what it means, leaving this burden to our kids and our grandchildren. We heard all of that rhetoric year after year, and now we have a bill that raises the deficit by $1.4 trillion.
So what did you hear from Bernie Sanders?
Well, I heard what I expected to hear from Bernie Sanders. But, hey, Mark, this is real simple. If you want to know how this law affects you, go pump your earnings into a calculator. You don't have to listen to Bernie Sanders. You don't have to listen to you.
Right.
You don't have to listen to me.
Right.
You can, for yourself, pump your numbers into this calculator and say, I'm either benefiting from this law or I'm not.
And do you, you come from the position that most Americans are going to benefit from this law?
In the short term, like 80%, we don't know what the out years are going to look like. And the other wild card is...
That's a hell of a qualification, Russell. What? Let me ask you, Russell, without you giving up, what do you do for a living?
I'm a professional. Let's call it that.
Why won't you just say what you are? I mean, what is when
I sell stuff for a living.
You sell stuff for a living. What, drugs?
Come on, man.
Well, that's why I'm asking you. I'm saying, come on, man, to you. Tell me, generally, without...
I'm a professional salesperson.
Okay.
Let's keep it professional.
Okay. Okay, you go ahead and you set the rules on what is professional. Okay, so you're a professional salesperson, and you are trumpeting this tax bill.
I'm saying that you have to, each individual has to go into the calculator.
But what about us collectively? That doesn't count?
Hey, Mark.
Yes.
This bill is designed for each person to experience their own positive or negative feelings about it. It's not designed for the collective.
Isn't that true for anything? I mean, anything that we talk...
Let me ask you something. Do you vote your own interest, Mark?
No, I vote what's good for not just me, but what's good for my family, what's good for my neighbor, and what's good for the country. I take all that into consideration.
That's not possible for you to know that.
Oh, yes, it is. It's possible for all of us to be engaged in what will benefit our fellow man.
Wait a minute. You
asked me, I'll answer you. And if that extends in a positive way, I will support it.
Okay, so if more Americans have money in their pockets, tell me why that's a bad thing.
Well, I don't know what more money in their pockets means. For how long before we have to pay for it?
That's an unknown. We don't know that.
The amount is not... It's like... I remember the Bush administration. They gave us tax breaks where we got about, what, anywhere, depending on what our income was, the majority of people, maybe $100 more a year. You know, some people got up to, as in this one, $300 a year. Yes. Is that good to put that money in your pocket? Yes. But at the expense of what? At the expense of 13 million people not getting health insurance, at the expense of no increase in legislation to increase minimum wage, you know, things like that, I would say, affect us.
I'll grant you that point and get off the phone, but as a standalone item, this bill is putting more money in the pocket of people, and it's also generated a tremendous amount of positive reaction with the business community in the way of granting bonuses.
Yeah, and you believe that. You believe that. You obviously believe that as a professional salesman. You believe that, correct?
Believe what?
What you just said.
It's a fact.
It's not a fact. Ronald Reagan touted the same thing, and it didn't do it, brother.
No. What I just said was factually true. People are going to have more money in their pocket, and businesses are granting bonuses to middle-class workers. That's a fact.
We'll see. You believe that? Okay, Russell, we'll ask our listeners if their personal experiences jive with your professional salesman experiences.
Perfect. That's exactly the way you should do it. Every person will experience this in their own way, and the truth will come out in the aggregate, but it has to be experienced at the individual level for this to be a success or a failure.
I want to wish you a happy new year, and I thank you for calling, Russell.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All righty. What'd you think about that? Here is Gino in Tampa.
Yes. I'd like to bring up, it's on the tax also, too, about what David Chappelle said. I got a snippet of it, not the whole thing, but he was saying that he's around a lot of rich people, which he probably is, and people who are probably in the 1% to 2%. And he said that when they speak on money issues. They don't look at it as a color issue. They look at it as a money issue. And he was saying that he found out that the tax bill category, which he made at one time, I know he had did that $50 million at one time, which I'm pretty sure he makes more than that now, but that was years ago. And he said, and that's what he said. And he was saying, you know, don't be, you know, telling them you're stupid. If you believe that Donald Trump is going to give you money, and see, to me, $65, $100 a year extra in my tax, that's nothing. That's nothing at all.
So the bottom line is, this is the point that we were making. Now, right. The bottom line, Gino, you think it's going to help you?
Do you think it's going to help
your fellow Americans, or should you even give a damn about that? Should you say the hell with everybody else, just what it's going to do for you? You've already said it's not going to do you any good, but do you think it'll do other people good?
No, because I think I make pretty good money.
Well, there you go.
It'll do me no good. No.
Thank you. Thank you, Gino. I appreciate it. Happy New Year. See, here's the deal. I don't know how familiar you are with union negotiations and everything else, but there are many unions that have sought, because you can't do this by yourself, by the way. I have to use a union scenario because, listen, I worked for a Fortune 500 company when I worked at High Line. They never gave us a real bonus. What they do is they don't pay you what you really should be paid. And then at the end of the year, they give you a little bit of what you really should have earned. You understand? I don't consider that bonus. And that's what happens everywhere you go. I forgot, Rob, refresh my, come on, Mike. Who was it? What union was looking for the $4,000 bonus?
The President Trump is getting credit for giving a $1,000 bonus to AT&T workers. But
AT&T.
The union that represents many blue-collar AT&T workers says it's been trying to negotiate a $4,000 pay increase, not a bonus. When you get a bonus, it doesn't increase your pay.
No, it doesn't.
All it does is it's a one-time thing. You have to pay all your taxes on the bonus, but next year your salary goes down. Let's say you're making $45,000.
Exactly.
Last year, 2017, this year you get a one-time $1,000 bonus, but then your pay the next year goes back down to $45,000. A bonus is a way for a company to give you a one-time shot, but it doesn't really help to increase your living expenses. So the union says, look, we tried to negotiate a $4,000 increase. Now the company's going to give us a $1,000 bonus, but they're not increasing our basic pay level. And now they're taking credit for it, but we think the company's doing so well, they should give us $4,000. So
and that $4,000 request is based on the profit margin of the company. See, that's what a lot of people do not understand about economics. And with all due respect to our professional salesmen, listen, I understand. I have a very good friend of mine that he was a salesperson. And let me tell you, nobody was better than him. I mean, He's my best friend, but he's the kind of guy that you put him on a job, and I've been involved in other ventures with this guy because I trust him. I know him. I've grown up with him, and there's nobody that puts his nose to the grindstone like him. And I remember he got a job selling office supply stuff. He had no roadmap. He had no business introductory list to get him there. And he just decided, he woke up the next day, he told me, you know, I got a job doing this, and this is my commission. They told me what it is. And I go, Alan, do you believe that commission? He goes, yes, I do. And I go, okay, go ahead. And, oh, the other thing he said was, yeah, I believe it, because if I don't, there's no use working for people like that. I go, good. So he went down Adamo Drive. He decided 50th Street and Adamo Drive. Now, we're West Tampa boys. He started there. He went down Adamo Drive to every single business. Every single business. He found which ones already have their office needs taken care of. But for the most part, they liked his presentation, the fact that he would deliver the items. You know, he offered what one must offer when you're a salesperson. I think within 10 days, he had set a record for the most office supplies sold in a week's time. This is 10 days after he got the job. And he told me, he goes, wow, man, it's a lot of hard work because you got to go and talk to different people, sell yourself. And I told him, how'd you do that? I mean, how did you sell it? But anyway, he went out and he did it. And about 2 weeks later, he came to me. And he was already in search of another job. And he gets one because that's the kind of guy he is. He's good. And I said, what happened? And he says, well, first of all, after I turned in all my sales, they changed the rules. And what I thought I was going to be getting in terms of a check, a good check, was almost half. Half. And I told him, well, you know, that's how they make their money, right? And he goes, you're damn right, but they're not going to do it on me. And he left. He even told all the people he had sold to that he would no longer be the salesperson. He didn't talk against the business. He just said, that's it. And it's something my mother used to tell me. And that is, look, when you go to work for somebody, do the best you can. Do everything you can. Because that's the right thing to do, number one. And don't expect anything in return. But when you're ready and you're able to map out what you think you're entitled, they will know and you will know whether you got it or not, whether you are worth it, because when you leave that job, they're not going to have that kind of performance again. That's how you have to model yourself. And I'll tell you, nothing came into clarity more for me was when I worked at Tampa Eyelife. The boss that I had, who eventually, after 15 years, did let me go. But I can say from this vantage point, and he's not here to defend himself, so I don't want to berate it, but I believe to this day, he thought I was the best at what I did. I know that. I feel it in my heart, even though he let me go and whatever. But he knew that I did my work. And that is what kept me there for 15 years. Because it's ridiculous to say you get rid of somebody, but yet they worked for you for 15 years. I remember when I went to file for my unemployment insurance, they couldn't believe it. Well, if they're saying this about you now, how come after 15 years, they didn't know this about you? I go, they do know it. It's just, it's convenient. When they have to get rid of you, they will. And my final word of advice to any millennium out there, and I don't know what your situation is, you have to evaluate it. But as I told one boss, he said, Mark, if you leave this job, will you give me a 2 weeks notice? That's considered good sportsmanship on the part of the worker to the owner. And I told him, no, I won't. And right away, he said, why not? Will you give me 2 weeks' notice before you fire me? Well, you know, I said, well, you know, fair game. What you're going to get from me is 40 hours a week work, and if I work over, you're going to get that from me. I'm not going to miss a day of work. I'm always going to be on time. I'll probably punch out late because I do my job. But bottom line is, you're not going to get any more trustworthy. Enough, by the way, to juxtapose that, I remember one time at Highline, somebody was stealing out of there. I'm talking about goods delivered by other companies. And I got called in the office. I was one of six people. I was stunned. And the boss told me, we're not saying you did it, but we have a handful of people that we would like to take a lie detector test. And I go, okay, I'll do it. Oh, you will. They were expecting a fight from me. And I said, no, but I do want this. When I pass it, I want my salary to increase X number of dollars. He goes, you can't do that. You can't barter. I go, well, then forget about me doing it. Because if you're not going to reward honesty and integrity, and it means that much to you, then he goes, well, what about if we let you go? Well, then that's your business. If you think this company can afford to let me go, I'm no bigger than anyone else, I'm ready. And I said, and if you keep on, I might just do it anyway. So it's up to you. You have to make your mind up of what you're going to settle for in life. And anyway, by the way, in answer to Tina, our first caller, I want to say this to her. I am sorry that I came off as negative, because I want to tell you, in my heart, I really am not. I'm a very optimistic person. I'm a little dismayed at a lot of the individuals that I hear from that profess one thing and actually do another. And that's for them to decide and everyone else to decide. But I try to go through life practicing what I preach. And I practice, I believe, before I preach it. So, listen, I know, Danny, you've been holding on, and this is not an affront to Danny, Les, Connie, and Mark, and all the people that are on the air. I'm going to let it go at that. I just wanted to say to all of you, thank you for calling the program. Thank you for participating. Thank you for being involved in community radio, 88.5 WMNF. And I just want to say it's such an honor to be here at Midpoint. And I just love all of you guys. Thanks for doing that for us. And until next Tuesday, my thanks, of course, to Jan Simpson. Happy New Year, Janny. And to Rob Lori, who helps produce this program. Happy New Year to you, Robbie. Thank you for everything. And we're going to have an executive session coming up right now after this program. And, of course, there's Supernola tomorrow, I believe, here on Midpoint. You won't want to miss out of it. Until next year, this is your hero, Mark Biro, saying thank you, love you all, Happy New Year, and I'm on my way.
I'm on my way. I cannot stay another day. You're so pusillanimous, so glass of wine with Gertrude Stein, I know I'll never share, but I don't mind, that's just the kind of course each man must bear. I'm on my way, I'm
Mark Bureau returns next Tuesday. This is WMNF Tampa. Stay tuned.